Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Wednesday, the 3rd of March, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, head coach Adam Griggs on the latest delay to more Rugby World Cup memories like this.
And there it is. Griggs kicks for touch. Wait for the whistle from Leah Birard. And there it is. Ireland have achieved the unthinkable. They have defeated four times world champions New Zealand and have secured a dramatic win here, and now they are definitely firm favourites to progress through to the semi-final.
In athletics, it's the eve of the European Indoors. Phelim Kelly and Cathal Dennehy are with us as our athletes aim for the stars.
As they go into that bend, it's De Arriba of Spain, it's Webb of Britain, it's English of Ireland, and Buba of Denmark in fourth. And English is Kelly hanging on in there. Mark English in hanging his place there. There's a big attack on the outside coming. Yes. Mark English gets the medal. Mark English gets the medal behind De Arriba and Jamie Webb of Britain. And it's another Irish medal, another Irish podium finish at the European Indoor Championships. Mark English takes the bronze in the men's 800 metres.
Plus, we've live Premier League and we catch up with Dublin Camogie manager Adrian O'Sullivan.
Game on 2FM.
You can get in touch by texting us on 51552 or tweet at Game On. Tonight in the Premier League, second place Manchester United will be in action when they face Crystal Palace. United are going into the game at Selhurst Park, 15 points adrift of leaders Manchester City. Leicester are away to Burnley and at Bramall Lane, it's Sheffield United against Aston Villa. But the game, Donica, that I'm keeping an eye on is the Women's Champions League. Man City are leading Fiorentina. That started at 4:45 and our own Louise Quinn is playing in that game. But Man City are winning 2-0 at the moment, and then later on Chelsea are playing Atletico, so good few matches on to keep us going for the evening.
Absolutely, good for Louise Quinn to get a start. Megan Campbell's been injured, Marie, is she involved?
No, unfortunately not, but Megan, like she would be if she was fully fit, but she just goes through a terrible time of injuries. We had her on the show not so long ago and she was doing her best to get back to full fitness, but unfortunately she's not quite there yet. But it would be great to see her, because if Manchester City could keep progressing here, you'd never know how far they would get. It's the round of 16 first leg, with the second legs to take place next week, and they're unbeaten in all competitions. Wow. And have won their last 8 matches. So look, they're on a really, really brilliant run of form. Brilliant to see them getting there. So they are leading Fiorentina 2-0, so not great for Louise Quinn, but look.
No, something going on in Man City, really, isn't it? They're unbeaten all the time at the moment. Hopefully Louise will bang home a hat-trick and we're back in it.
Which is good from the old set pieces, all right.
There was news about Jurgen Klopp. He has a bit of an issue with the international matches, Marie. What's going on?
Yeah, so he has said that he's not going to allow his players to travel to international matches later in this month if they have to quarantine on their return. So that is the red list countries like Brazil, which would be Alisson Becker and Firmino and Fabinho, and Portugal's Diogo Jota. So FIFA have given clubs dispensation to prevent players who may be affected by the regulations from joining up with their countries, because they'd have to quarantine and then like Klopp wouldn't have them. And like we all know, many players he's already missing. Yeah. So he said that he fully intends to employ it. And he thinks that all clubs agree that they cannot just let the boys go and then sort the situation when they come back by placing their players into a 10-day quarantine in a hotel. He said it is not possible. He understands that the FAs would obviously like their players to be there for these big games, but the clubs play the players ultimately, and they're the ones who are going to call the shots. So it's...
What I like about it anyway, he's flagged it good and early, hasn't he? You know, he's not waiting till the week of it or a little bit of time after it. He's leaving them know right now that, you know, like, because it can be a mess. Imagine all these people travelling in this off time. And I'd say for a manager, they're trying to keep an eye on, you know, who's breaking bubbles. And we've seen it in rugby with the mm-hmm. French squad. You know, it's very hard to have good processes. And you just don't know what you're putting your players at risk of.
Yeah, and we've seen it with Liverpool. I think we're ones that really stood out over the last while. We saw Salah on international duty and there was issues around pictures of him that came to the fore out celebrating and dancing and all that sort of stuff when the coronavirus was in full flight, and Mane as well. So there's been some difficulties with the coronavirus. So I'd say that Jurgen Klopp does not want to see any more of his players get the coronavirus or it be any way in the camp. So look, fair enough, I think, at the moment. Yeah. Burnley are leading Leicester at the moment, 1-0. So some early action.
After the reaction of Roy Keane on Saturday, was it? Did you hear his little rant that he could play for Burnley at the moment?
Yeah, he was on fire now, I have to say, at the weekend. He was really getting the boot into Spurs.
Do you know what I like about Roy Keane? When the games are flat, he provides all the entertainment. It's like he's gone, okay, I know those 22 lads were rubbish. I've got this, lads. I will make this day worthwhile for the people watching at home. And he just steps up and just hands Jamie Redknapp his ear.
I think Jamie probably didn't really handle it too well. Like, you could see that Roy was pushing his buttons and he was getting a kick out of it. And the more that Jamie was reacting, the harder that Roy pushed. You could see that he was almost entertaining himself because he knew that he was getting that sort of reaction from Jamie. And I saw an analogy on Twitter that, you know, Roy might not have been the best player in the world, but he knew what buttons to press when it came to getting at the opposition, when it came to getting under their skin, causing trouble. And it was like, that was exactly what he was doing when he was laying into Jamie.
And you know what I loved about it as well? The delay from the Zoom. So they obviously weren't there. Jamie Redknapp was pitch side and Roy Keane's in studio. So the little bit of a delay seemed to suit Roy Keane as well. It left him compose himself. He's there, you know, what Tottenham players would make it into that? And he's there, Bar Kane and Son.
Just, and anyone can play for their country if they can trap the ball as well. And then he had a bit of a go at Matt Doherty as well, which I thought was a little bit unfair. But there's clearly history between the two of them. And I'd say he was obviously waiting to have his go. On some good news, Donica, we saw Jack Regan has regained his spot this weekend.
And I don't think we can highlight this enough, how what he's doing, how incredible it really is. He's playing Super Rugby. We've seen Rob Kearney doing it now as well. But Rob Kearney is, you know, 98 caps for Ireland. He's an established player. Here's a young second-row that's gone down, learnt his trade down there, and is doing back-to-back super, what I would have called Super 10s, but now it's kind of broken into the Super Aurora, I think is the name of the national competition in New Zealand. But he'll tug out this week against the Chiefs, and just the quality of rugby he's playing, and just even his skills, you just watch the game back. It's a pity it's not on Sky Sports, or any that we can't see it. And I think that's vital, because for young players to learn trends and see what's going on in the game, to be students of the game, is really important. But to be fair, you need good access nowadays. But he's playing really well, and we always talk about players, you know, how do we find another pathway? Well, here's a guy, let's keep an eye on him, and let's make sure, you know, that he could come into the fold somewhere along the line. But I think what he's doing is brilliant. What a place to learn your trade.
It says a lot about his character as well. Okay, things didn't work out for him in Ulster, didn't go the way that he had planned, but there was no quitting. Like, he, as you said, is finding a pathway, he's finding another way, he's getting himself out there, he's playing at a really high standard, he's developing his skills, he's developing his game, and who knows what the future can hold.
I used to have conversations in Worcester with Ben Teo, and he was convinced that, you know, between the provincial players, that an awful lot of them are quite happy to sit in a provincial tracksuit and get the odd game. You know what I mean? He was kind of nearly convinced that Irish players have to travel more and push themselves. You know, that it's brilliant playing for your province in a place you love, but, you know, if it doesn't work out and you're not the top dog and you're not the starting player, you actually have to find an environment to become that. And look, I think Jack's the opposite of that. He's finding a pathway for himself. But I think there's an awful lot of players could look to him now and say, yeah, you know, if I'm not getting a look in here, there is other ways to make it. So fair play to him. It really is incredible.
But I'd imagine, though, if you are in a province and you're getting you have a good contract and you're getting paid every week, OK, you mightn't be getting that first team experience, it is quite hard to walk away from a professional contract, Donica, because they don't come that easy.
100%. And the point with Benny Teo was, it's amazing what Irish provinces have that people love and want to play for them. Like, he just actually couldn't believe that. He thought at one point, where does the ruthless streak come in to not only earn good money, but to make sure you fulfil your potential? But some guys, you know, his point, and it was interesting, some guys want to win and want to be a part of it without maximising fully their potential, to be a cog in a massive wheel, which, you know, is a lovely thing to do, but
Where's the job satisfaction?
Yeah, exactly. He's there like, why not be a class player in a big team?
Right, well, yeah. We might revisit that because it is quite an interesting one, and especially as we're noticing a lot of people are signing contracts now at the moment. We're going to take a quick break right now, though, and we'll be back with Ireland head coach Adam Griggs on the deferred Rugby World Cup.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, last night we heard that World Rugby had confirmed that 2021 Women's World Cup in New Zealand was postponed until next year due to challenges caused by the coronavirus. To discuss, we're delighted to be joined by Ireland's head coach, Adam Griggs. Adam, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm very good. Obviously, we were chatting about this last night. I found it disappointing myself. I can't imagine how it must be for you and the girls in the squad.
Yeah, it's highly disappointing for us. I suppose at the moment, what makes it bittersweet is we actually haven't qualified for the World Cup yet. So, you know, there's still our World Cup qualification to get through before we felt, you know, we would be on a plane to New Zealand anyway. So having it pushed out a year is difficult. And we're obviously still waiting for World Rugby to confirm what our qualification will look like. It puts everything up in the air, that's for sure.
Because last night we were discussing that there was probably the potential of playing Spain for that qualification. Are you any the wiser to that?
Yeah, so that was obviously the plan. But I think with the postponement from World Rugby of the World Cup, they're now looking to refix those schedules and those fixtures. I guess it gives us a chance for better preparation, you know, to run those over the last 8 to 10 months with the coronavirus. The format of those qualifiers has changed a few times, and so, you know, while Ireland have been keen to get that process going, I think World Rugby settling on the final process, which could be further down the track, will eventually suit us.
Adam, just paint a picture for us. What does it mean for the girls involved? Because we know they've been training really hard, doing training camps for the last week, the last few months. They're regular people, they're not professionals, they're on the front line, they're doing teaching jobs, they're just normal people who really wanted this.
Yeah, I think that's part of the deflation in the group at the moment, to be honest, because, you know, there does take a lot of planning from them and their personal lives and the commitment that they put into the program to make sure that they can perform. And so when you get this sort of news, it's a lot harder to take for the group. You know, we were together last night for a training run, just some gym and skills, and I think actually having everyone together probably helped, you know, just to even take the mind off it for 30 minutes while we ran around. But you could definitely tell within the group it was a somber mood. And look, you know, these girls do have other things going on in their lives, and that makes it probably part of the challenge, but at the same time, I know they're a really committed group, and we just got to try and push on. And we're lucky, I suppose, in this point, we are going to try and look forward to the Six Nations fixtures. You know, they're a month away, and I guess that's now where we have to shift our focus to try and keep a positive headspace with all the work that we have done.
A year is quite a long time, I think, when you have been aiming for something or hoping something that would come along. Do you think you're going to retain everybody, Adam?
That's a good question. I would hope so. I think we've got a really good group there. And over the last kind of year, from the last Six Nations before everything got put on hold, the group themselves could see the progression we've been making, you know, in our style of play and the way we're training. Even, you know, some of our fitness have hit personal bests over the last year. So I would hope, you know, that is driving them on, that they can almost see that light at the end of the tunnel, that we have made really positive strides, and, you know, when we get the chance to play again, I'm sure that will come out. So I'd be pretty confident that our group will stick together through this.
Adam, just on that point, obviously as a coach it's easy, but now as a manager you've probably to have those conversations, because we know, just from my own experience, I know World Cups become landmarks for players to probably decide, I'll go that far and then step away. How important is it for you to just have that kind of personal management with the girls to make sure they're all in line and, like you're saying, PBing towards a postponed World Cup?
It's hugely important, and you've hit the nail on the head there, because I suppose I pride myself in making sure I'm approachable to the players and have a good grasp of what's going on for them on the field but also off the field. And I think those conversations do have to start happening, certainly with some of our more experienced players who would have targeted this date and that goal of, as you say, getting to the World Cup and on the world stage. And so, you know, I will have to bring up those conversations. But as I say, I think I have a good idea of the group anyway over the last year, and making sure that it's not just having those conversations in a time of, I suppose, albeit a little bit of a crisis, but having those conversations regularly and checking in with the group. And I think we're probably in a good space there. And as I say, maybe this has changed some plans, but there'll be conversations that we make sure we do have with those players.
Adam, the last time we spoke to you was because the Six Nations was postponed, and now we're talking to you again about a World Cup postponement. Just for you personally, just the goalposts keep shifting, and I can imagine, like, being a head coach and trying to do all your prep and your planning and your peaking, it must be difficult.
Yeah, it's been a really challenging time, I can't lie. And even, like, for the players, I think it's very much similar for coaches and managers. You can't always sustain that peak performance that you've been striving for. And so, you know, even through the last kind of 2 months, we've been targeting, you know, dates of qualifiers and then Six Nations, and they all get changed. You have to make sure that you can actually take a bit of time to process it, you know. So we're in camp this week, but we're making sure that we get a couple of weeks off now where the players can just step away, and like the coaches and managers can take some time with the families, because you can't be up the top of your game the whole time. And I think if you did that, you'd burn out before you're due to perform, you know. And so, yeah, it's been a really challenging time. But at the same time, we've been priding ourselves on being adaptable, and I guess this is another hurdle for us to overcome.
And you're certainly going to need to be that. You've mentioned an awful lot of PBs in the camp, and we spoke about it before, the importance of actually getting rugby time. You can be as fit as you like, but just the skills of actually not getting out on the pitch. How are you managing with that now? Is the friendly fire in training still as sparky, or do you need another challenge? Do you need to find some other way of playing games?
Yeah, we've again pursued the internal games within the squad as well, and we've been really lucky that we've been able to bring in our seven squads as well. So we've been able to challenge ourselves a little bit more with players that we don't know as regularly as, you know, the whole squad. But at the same time, I think at this point with some of the news, it's more about mentally refreshing ourselves than even the physical side of it. So from our point of view, I think we've got a really good bank of preparation in, and we're just itching to play rugby. But we also have to have a bit of faith that, you know, if we want to have a bit of fun and do some, you know, unit challenges and things like that, it's not going to take away from our end goal, and we can balance that out.
Adam, we've had a few athletes on over the last year who didn't think they were going to make an Olympic Games when the first pandemic hit. And now that we're in the third one, we've been chatting to them again, and they've improved immensely over the last year, and Olympic Games are within their grasp. That year off, that year away, or that postponed year actually suited them. Do you think potentially, I know you're not quite there yet, you do have qualifiers to go through yet, potentially having that extra year might be a benefit in the long run?
I do. I genuinely do, because this is the longest a women's national side have been together, because we haven't had the challenges of our interprovincial games and the club game as well. And like, well, obviously we want players playing. While that's not going on, we've had a huge amount of time to assemble and actually stay together. And so, you know, in terms of the game understanding and what we're trying to do as a squad, we couldn't have had more time. So I do think this will hold us in good stead. And it will be about getting a run of matches under our belts. And when we can do that, which is hopefully the Six Nations in April, I know that the side will improve game on game, and we may be a little bit rusty to start, but I've seen it before in the way that they improve. And so I think when you've got the understanding there, then it's just about going out and getting those match minutes to keep us going.
Adam, I know players dream kind of long term, but they focus on the short term, and obviously hopefully a Six Nations in April. How are you preparing now for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's all we can do is really look at that. And even around the qualifiers, the Six Nations has a real importance to us, because every test match obviously has world ranking points up for grabs, and those world rankings will come into play around, you know, whether we get some home games or it's away. So I think that's an extra motivation for us coming into the Six Nations, and I think that's something that will drive the players on when we come together and start to prepare for Wales first, and then obviously France before the last game, which is exciting as well because it's a little bit unknown. You know, we won't know the opposition until we've got through the first two rounds. So I think that side of the format is something that's freshened it up, and we'll look forward to that.
Adam, since the news broke about the postponement, there has been a lot of people airing their frustration and their disappointment. And, you know, some international players have felt that the women's game at an international level has been treated unequally compared to the men's game in the middle amidst the pandemic. What are your thoughts?
I just don't think you can compare the two, to be honest. You know, the lads are fully professional, and as you alluded to before, we've got players that are teachers or they're in work, and so you have to take each program on its merit, and it's a lot easier for the men to be able to bubble and stick together and keep that safety in there. And for us, you can see that these are the challenges for essentially amateur athletes, that what they've got jobs to do, they've got to earn a living. I think you have to take each program on its merit.
And when this pandemic does eventually come to an end, there are going to be huge challenges for associations and for governing bodies. Do you have any concerns that women's rugby might suffer because of the challenges that world rugby and rugby in the world are going to face?
I mean, I think every sport will have its challenges, absolutely. You know, we'd hope that what's been going on, you know, you can see through the IFU social media channels and everything, they've done a really good job of keeping players engaged in the game, and I think that's been really important. And the other side of it is when you've got those players, or you know, even the lower divisions, people who are rugby mad, they're actually just dying to get back out there. And so I think we've got to look at it that side, is that we've kept them engaged, and when we are able to get back out there, just like ourselves, everyone wants to get stuck in and play the game that they really enjoy.
Adam, you mentioned the sevens, and we've seen with probably players like Hugo Keenan coming through in the men's game, how important that can be in, you know, adding to the attacking flair of a team. Is that something you could look at more, maybe using the sevens players from the girls' programme, or introducing that within your little bubble there?
Yeah, it's definitely something that I guess has been a silver lining in terms of there not being World Series. You know, we've always been able to have it as one overall women's program, but at the same time, the challenges have been World Series events taking place at the same time as Six Nations, or you know, November Test Series. So that's always been the challenge. So we've been able to integrate a good few sevens girls into the 15s program as well, and so it's definitely something that will help us as a program and as a squad as well, that we can integrate them into some rugby. And you know, if they are they're good enough and they can earn selection, they're certainly capable of pulling on the green jersey.
Absolutely. Adam, thanks so much. We wish you all the best, especially with the upcoming Six Nations, and we look forward to seeing the girls go well, hopefully qualify for a brilliant World Cup in New Zealand. Thanks for joining us on Game On.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Marie, before we get to it, tomorrow is a busy day for athletics, but it's also a major music treat here on 2FM. Our fantastic teammate Tracy Clifford will present the RTE Choice Music Prize on her show from 2 to 3. It's live here on the station on 2FM and on the RTE player, so you can see it, or so you can watch it on the player and listen to it here. Tracy will have special performances from all the albums of the year, including Pillow Queens, Nilo, Roisin Murphy, Fontaines DC, and Limerick's very own Denise Chyla. So don't miss it. It's the RTE Choice Music Prize on Tracy Clifford show here on 2FM and on the RTE player from tomorrow at midday. It's basically like the All-Ireland for music, isn't it?
Is it? That's brilliant. Now you got me. Yeah, I'm in.
Let's pack our ham sandwiches and watch Tracy on the player.
That's brilliant. Okay, so this weekend, as you said, or actually tomorrow, it's tomorrow Thursday. Tomorrow there is a lot of, there'll be a lot of excitement around the athletics world because Team Ireland have 22 athletes in Poland for the European Indoor Championships, and to discuss all of them, well, as many as we can get in anyway, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by journalist Carl Dennehy and Dublin track coach Phelim Kelly. Phelim, that's probably not enough of an intro for you. Dublin track coach and a whole lot more as well. Athletics expert, I'll put you down as. But I'm going to go to you first, Carl, because we've been chatting so much about the impressive performances from our athletes over the last few weeks and a few months, and I'm just wondering, is this surge in standard as good as it seems?
I definitely think it is as good as it seems in terms of depth. Now, there's no doubt that shoe technology is playing a role, I guess, but it's not only shoe technology. I mean, when you go across the board, I mean, for the first time ever, Ireland has three athletes in the men's and women's 60 metres, both of those races here in Poland, and that speaks really to a sport that is flying in terms of the standards across the sprints have come up, the standards across the middle distances. I mean, there's no point pretending they're back to the glory days. They may well never be back to the glory days in terms of how many medals we're winning on the European and the global stage. But the fact that we're qualifying so many, I think we had six qualifiers for the men's 3,000 metres at the European indoors, and that's despite Athletics Ireland making the standards a good bit harder than the European athletics had set them. So yeah, things are definitely on the up, but I suppose fast times are one thing. The real currency that counts in athletics is medals, and over the next few days, whilst the ones will get a much better impression of where things stand.
Okay, well, as you said, we will be finding out very, very soon how those athletes get on and how many medals they come home with, hopefully a few. Phelim, there's been a lot of positivity as well, okay? We'll say we just park the performances and the times and that. Just a lot of good coverage around Irish athletics, which is really, really brilliant to see. But a lot of that has been focused on what you're doing and what Dublin Track Club are doing. And for people that don't know, can you just tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, I suppose I was on the show. It seems everything seems a lot longer now, doesn't it? With the COVID, I can't remember. Was it March or when? We were on at some stage anyway. You had nobody better to talk to, so obviously I was called in. But yeah, I think basically what we've been doing or with the group is basically I've gotten a lot of good runners to try and just get together and work together, and it's kind of been paying off pretty well. And I have, but there's eight runners in the group with qualifying standards for this championships. Unfortunately, not all were selected because other people ran better, and then just some selection decisions. And I think I'll have one more. But basically, we have a simple system. We train generally Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, try and get a group training going, and that has kind of seen them all improve and kind of that sense of standard improve. And then alongside other coaches and other athletes, they've been improving too. So I suppose we've kind of got an umbrella, which is a little bit different. We're not a university. We're not an actual club. Okay, the umbrella is the Dublin Track Club, but we're not actually a club. All these runners run for their different clubs, whether it be Leave, Raheny Shamrock, Clonmel. They're all over the country generally. And most of them are obviously based in Dublin, or I try to get them to be based in Dublin as much as possible. And then we work around that, get them to train together and just raise the level of the standard. And it's kind of been modelled on, I suppose, Nick Badeau and Melbourne Track Club, but a lot also on, you know, in the US, a lot of it is all based on group training. And that started in the early 2000s. I think they kick-started American distance running again, basically because they were just rejecting the basics. What we do is just the basics. A lot of training is based on a guy from New Zealand called Arthur Lydiard in the think it's the 50s, but certainly the 60s, he had his big breakthroughs with the likes of Peter Snell, and they had the Flying Kiwis, and that kicked on to people like John Walker and further on, and that was obviously Eamon Coughlin era then as well. But basically, we have a simple philosophy of, to keep it simple, try to have a high mileage and do some of the basic principles of training and doing it day in, day out, and trying to remove as much of the barriers as possible to do that.
Phelim, your passion for the sport is incredible, but you mentioned there putting the structure in place and sticking to the basics. But how do you control things then, like culture, to make an environment where everyone pushes each other on?
Yeah, I know there's a lot about, like, I suppose you'd know as well, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts too. Just, like, you've got a lot of stuff, like, called high performance and coaches and experts and all this type of talk, but really it boils down to the basics. Do you have the right mentality? Do you want to be good? And are you willing to do it day in, day out? And I think that's where, like, the Dublin Gaelic team, obviously, in your Munster days, I think I saw a picture on Sportsfile 2007, they pulled one out there last week. But you're just trying to kind of get into that sense of, like, also, I'm trying to get in with these guys, and I think we're developing. It's like, we are a team. Okay, we're all individuals, and there are hairy moments and stuff like that, and some of them do compete against each other, but if you're happy for the others and we're working together, you know, you've got energy behind you. You don't want people not rooting for you. Like, that energy is important, that you want to see people do well, and when you've got that energy behind them, then they can kind of help each other and encourage each other, because, like, they were at training camps, they have to help each other in terms of, like, logistics, booking flights, even, like, we have our eyes out for, you know, on those shoes, when are the spikes available? People throw the links in so that people can buy them, and, you know, that we can be trying to be as competitive as we possibly can. So for me, I suppose it's, you know, WhatsApp groups, also meeting for training, and me trying to be as best as possible positive, and I'm there all the time, and they know that regardless, I'm going to be there Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for the main training, and, you know, there's no excuses, and I've kind of bought in pretty much 100% myself, so I'm expecting the same back.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on your athletes over the next few days. The atmosphere that we're hearing there is Carl Denny at the track in Poland. So, Carl, we do have a big team over there, so there's a lot to get through, but we'll start with maybe those that you think are going to be able to reach finals before we get to maybe medal contenders.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of, I apologise firstly for that atmosphere. I found it quite
arena
to run to train for hockey in, and they're still blaring out national anthems behind me here at the track. But yeah, in preparation, it starts tomorrow evening, and yeah, we have a lot of contenders, I suppose, for finals. I mean, I suppose we may as well start with the real medal contenders, and for me, I think it's going to come down to both 800 metre races. In the men's, we have Mark English, who's obviously been there, done the silver and a bronze medal from this event before in 2015 and 2019. And then in the women's side, I think mainly you're looking at two athletes with a capable of a medal chance, and that's Shefra Clary Butner and Nadia Power. Shefra is ranked third on season's best, which is the one you always kind of look at a championship like this. Nadia is ranked fifth on season's best, and English is ranked sixth on season's best. Now, obviously, a lot of those times count for nothing. And of the three, I would say Mark English is probably the one with the best medal chance. You know, he's done it at this level before. He's done it even in outdoor European championships. He has that kind of tactical speed and most of all the experience and the confidence at a place like this, because, you know, indoor racing is a different ball game. It's more physical. It's kind of like a UFC fight mixed with a race, really. You know, it's all elbows and things. So you need to have that confidence and that bit of swagger about you to try and not get pushed around out there. And English is well capable of doing that. He's a big, strong lad. Like, in the women's race, like, I think none of these athletes are going to be thinking medals at this stage. They have two rounds to get through first before they get to that final on Sunday evening. And there's a good chance some of them won't make it to the final. But I think if they do, they'll certainly be thinking about a medal. And when it comes to Shefra and Nadia, they've both done it on the circuit. They both run 2 minutes flat for 800 this year. But they're lining up against athletes. And, you know, there are some of Europe's best. It's such a pity Kieran McGeehan pulled out, because the women's 1500-metre field is very weak. And McGeehan, at even 90%, I think, would have walked the medal. The 800, unfortunately, for the Irish Brigade is a lot stronger. You have four athletes in broken 2 minutes. And as we know, only one Irish athlete ever, which is McGeehan, has broken 2 minutes. Shefra and Nadia have not yet done that, but they're certainly right in there. And they should at least one of them, I think, should be in that six-woman final on Sunday evening. Beyond that, I think you're looking at probably Phil Healy as the best kind of top six candidate, or Andrew Coskern, who's also ranked sixth on season's best in the men's 1500. But again, with indoor athletics, you're looking at so many of these races, there's probably going to be, you know, if you take the men's 1500, there's going to be about 10 or 12 athletes within about a second of each other, which is, in a 3.5 minute race, is you're looking at blanket finishes and cutthroat qualification procedures. So it's going to be very hard to know. But I think if we're starting to dream of medals, I think the 800 meters men's and women's is the place to look.
Phelan, let's talk about Mark for a minute. So you've obviously seen him up close and personal at the moment. How is his form? How's he looking? How do you think he's feeling heading into these championships?
Yeah, well, he's looking good anyway. It's just, like Carl said, I think it's going to be, I've just been looking at the women's heats there, it should be pretty much the same. So it's three rounds, and it's first three from the heat, and then I think it's similar in the semis. But yeah, look, he's looking good. He's training well. He obviously had one race, and that kind of got a lot of attention there because of the young up-and-coming superstar, hopefully, Kian McPhillips, who's coached by Joe Ryan. He ran him all the way to the line in that Athletics Ireland micro meet. So that was one race, was a national record, and he was wearing normal spikes, for anyone who wants to know that. So at least we know he's improving. I've kind of been involved with Mark down through the years. I remember I said it to Dunica the last time, that I was a bit of a caddy, but that was my role at the time, more with Mark. I was kind of a pacemaker and timekeeper at the time. He won a medal in Prague that time. So, like, he's in good shape. The standard, again, of the men's 800 is quite high this year. I think other times he was even more clear-cut in his position, but he's got a lot of confidence, and he is his own man, like, you know, so he'll be going out there, he'll know his own plan, and he'll know what to do. So, yeah, hoping it's going to be good enough. And, yeah, he is in good shape. Speed is good. Fitness is good. So now it's up to him to obviously go and kind of go out there and get the job done.
Phelan, Cahill mentioned that there, it's not about times in events like this. It's about getting medals. And just for you there, working with the athletes, how do you help them to peak for this time of the year, or to peak for this one big performance?
Yeah, again, on peaking, like, you kind of just have to be in good shape. Like, when you're in a flow and you're going well, you'll know when you're going well as any sports person. You know when you're in the flow, you haven't had any interruptions, and, you know, you're doing kind of some benchmark sessions, like, you know, in terms of Mark, would be some kind of time trial, or just you're trying to get, let's say, 800 indoors is going to be four laps of the track. So, again, in this type of a race, you know, let's say they went through in 51 seconds in that race in the micro meet, but, you know, more than likely a lot of these races are going to go through in around 55, 56 seconds. So, like, something we try and do is, like sets of, like, so 2x400, you take a minute break, let's say, but you try and do the first 400 in 55, and let's see how fast you can run the second one. You know, can you close in a 52? So, you know, that's the type of little bits and pieces that you're trying to do to get there. And then, again, you've got to be trying to get the athletes to be calm, to really be able to read the race, because, like, a coach can only do so much. What you're trying to do is get them to be problem solvers, and can they create the solutions on the track? So, like, in this one, okay, if it's a slow race and you're in the bends, this is where Coughlin was the expert. Like, you don't pass in the bends, the outdoors. You certainly try not to do it in the indoors. It's just so tight. You've got to be able to pass on the straights. And this is where Marcin Lewandowski, who would be one of the hometown favourites in the 15, he can make a move. You've got to make a move and run, like, let's say, flat out on a straight to pass. But you've got to really go, like, eyeballs out to get there, even if you've got a certain distance left. You can't say, oh, well, I've got to save some energy. You've got to make that move there, and then you can kind of try and hold people, let's say, in a bend. So there's a lot of that type of tactical. That's where there is more argy-bargy in the indoor running, and that's where, when people are watching, like, the men's and women's, obviously, 800 races, and also the 400-metre races, they're going to be brilliant to watch as a spectator, because there's all that type of, do I make go for the break in the 400? You'll see them. They either go for the tactic that they go flat out to get to the front at the bell. That's what Phil Healy will try and do. And then see, can you hold on, or do you trust that you can try and get round one or two people going round and get the win or qualify?
Well, you're making it sound absolutely fascinating. Anyway, Valen, it's brilliant.
It's a gladiator on spikes.
Carl, do you think anyone is going to surprise us? Like any surprise packets out there? Someone that you, I suppose, going into it, we might not be expecting them to reach a final or to potentially even come close to a medal.
There are a few. I'd say Paul Robinson now in the 1500. He's only coming in with a 3:39, but he's 29 years old, and it's kind of almost the second section of his career, I suppose. But he's an athlete, I suppose, who's such experience at this level. You know, going back to kind of 2014, he was fourth in the Europe Outdoor Final. And I think he's got that kind of brain in his head, and he's got that tactical speed that could be really useful in this arena. And besides that, I'd say maybe Sean Tobin in the 3000. Excuse me, I'm just after running up a back stairs there. I think Sean Tobin is to try and get to a quieter part of this arena. But Sean Tobin as well in the men's 3000, I think he could be very dangerous as well. He's got very good closing speed, and I'm sure Phelan could tell us a lot more about what sort of shape he's in coming in.
Phelan's going to give you a training program.
Very, very little.
I don't think we have we actually have the time, Phelan, to go through his closing speeds, but we have a couple of minutes left, and I want to talk a little bit about Sarah Lavin. And Carl, I'll go to you on Sarah, because we've had her on a couple of times, and like we obviously all watched her as a junior and saw the potential that she has and almost kind of lived through the heartbreak with her over the years when things didn't go to plan. But she seems back on track, and you know, we watched her in Madrid last week and do really well again. How do you think she's going to get on over there?
Look, Sarah is an athlete, I suppose, who's going to be up against it, you know, to even get out of the heat out here. And I know this is such a cliched thing, and it's, you know, people would really like criticize it for saying, but like, she is genuinely an athlete who should be really happy to have got here. Now, she's so ambitious that she's not going to settle for that. She will definitely want to get into a semi-final, and she's certainly good enough to get into a semi-final. She ran her personal best, two personal bests actually, in Madrid last week, and brought her personal best down to 8:13. She'll need to probably repeat that to get into the semi-final. I don't think she's going to be quick enough to make a final. But much like Paul Robinson, after years of injury and years kind of maybe not fulfilling her potential because of that, she's back, she's healthy, and she's flying. And you know what? No athlete deserves it more to be out there than Sarah Lavin. And I think you'll see that on her face when she gets on the start line this weekend. Again, for athletes like that, you do have to kind of temper expectation. There's no point talking up medals or finals when it's highly unlikely to happen. But if she can get out there, kind of get down in and around the 8:10 mark, take another maybe 100th or 200th of a second off her personal best, then she'll be well in line for, you know, the kind of Olympic journey in terms of qualification later this year.
And Phelan, just on the young athletes, obviously we've got a few of them heading out there as well. And as Cathal said, it can be a mix of athletics and UFC. But just in terms of the experience now that you're a coach, for them to get to go out there and to be in a competition like this and to be part of such a good story as well, how beneficial will that be?
Yeah, I think it's beneficial. Like, obviously, in a previous role, I've been to championships as the Athletics Ireland kind of media person down there in the Lions Den there. And, you know, for some of the athletes, we're hoping for the best for all of them, and even in my group, but it will be brutal. There will be performances that they mightn't be as happy with. What they've kind of got to go in with the mentality is, like, right, I have a, and this is what I try to say to myself, you've got to have a minimum standard. You know, once you set yourself a minimum standard of your performance, then obviously, like Cathal said, like, then you can think, okay, maybe a semi-final, maybe think, like, you know, if you've run 146, you know, your minimum standard should be at least 147 or whatever, you know, depending on the race. And same with the sprinters, they can really knuckle down to, like, you know, it's a straight line, 60 metres, we've got a bunch of sprinters in that. They can see their season's best, and they should be trying to at least replicate, you know, close enough or better than that. And they've got to get into their head that, like, you know, it is brutal. It's going to be early morning starts for some of them, and they've just got to get on with it. And I know a lot of the athletes, they've had a challenge, and they're still travelling. It's not a great travel, obviously, with the COVID. Like, they've been up at 3 a.m, Mark and the rest of them, and the others travelled yesterday. They've been on the go since 3 a.m, and they got to their hotel room, I think, at 9 p.m. So, like, they've got to rest up, and they've got to block that out, and they've got to be ready for it. It's the 60 metres right up to the 3000. The athletes just need to kind of try and get on with that. And, you know, again, like Cathal said, they're cliches, getting to learn from the experience, but experience is only vital if you've said to yourself, right, I got the best out of myself that I had on the day, and I have a minimum standard. Don't just pack it in And what the athletes need to learn as well is they mightn't qualify, but fight for fifth place, fight for sixth place. That will stand to you in the long run. And I know people like John Travers, it's his fifth championship, so you can get there. Similarly, Fionnuala McCormack, now formerly Britain, would always say she started off at the bottom and then obviously she went and eventually won a medal. So you've got to be resilient, and they need to be just in that focus of like controlled aggression and just get out there and be focused.
Well, I have to say, Colin Phelan, you've built it up so brilliantly for us. I actually can't wait for it now. You've set the scene perfectly, so I think we'll all be glued to it over the weekend. Thanks so much, Phelan. Best of luck to all of your athletes, and Cahill, enjoy watching all the athletics firsthand over there. Thanks so much. Now it's half time in both Premier League games. Burnley and Leicester is 1-1, and Sheffield United are leading Aston Villa 1-0 with David McGoldrick getting the goal for Sheffield United, and Man City have beaten Fiorentina 3-0 in that Women's Champions League game. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now it is time to turn our attention to Gaelic games. I'm delighted to say that the Dublin Camogie manager Adrian O'Sullivan joins us on the line. Adrian, you're taking over a team in the middle of a pandemic. How are you even coping? What are you doing?
It's an interesting one, all right, Marie, in fairness. I suppose I was listening to their last callers, last guest there. So I'm experiencing a lot of the same emotions that those guys are. I suppose the excitement and the enthusiasm to get going of the athletic guys, and then obviously I suppose a little bit of the frustration and not knowing that the rugby players are experiencing as well. But it's look, I suppose a job this size, whether you're in the middle of a pandemic or not, you can't really say no to it. But we are where we are now, so we just have to drive on, I suppose.
You have a great CV with UL, and then like you've won county titles with Thomas Down in Kilkenny, and there was those Ashburn Cups in Limerick. But this is a really big job, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose I went on record there early on in the time of my tenure, I suppose, right at the start when I was flat out doing interviews and things like that. And I said it was the biggest job in Camogie, you know, and a lot of people might have raised their eyebrows at that. But I suppose if you look at the history and the heritage that's there in Dublin Camogie, Joe, they're number two on the Roll of Honour list. They've 26 titles. I suppose, unfortunately, the last one was in 1984. But when you look around at what the other three codes have achieved in Dublin, I suppose, obviously with Mick Bohan with the ladies footballers and Jim and Desi with the men, and what Dalo and the lads did, I suppose, with the hurlers. Look, there's no reason that the Camogie team can't achieve the same, and I suppose so that in itself makes it a big job, you know.
Adrian, all good management put good people around them, and you've got some of the best with Ray Boylan and Donny Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, Donica, you know yourself, the key to surviving in management is find as many people as you can who know more about it than you do and let them off to do their thing.
It's so true.
We're getting great advice in the show tonight.
But Adrian, that's a skill though, isn't it? Like, to actually have that assurance in yourself, to actually go, I don't know this, maybe this area as well, but Donny knows that brilliantly.
Yeah, and look, I suppose it's a huge leap of faith for me, because I suppose Kevin Broderick and Jenny Byrne had done a huge amount of work in the background, in that they went and recruited me, they went and recruited Donny, and they went and recruited Ray, all without any of us knowing about it. So, like, for any manager to go working with a coach that you don't know is a leap of faith, and the same can be said for Donny with working with me. He doesn't know me as a manager. But just to go back to your last caller, Eric, Donny's involved in Nadia Power's backroom team and stuff like that. So he's a real top-class operator, and look, it only took one phone call between myself and Donny to know that we wanted to work together. So going from the coaching to the management, it's like, that's probably the thing that I was most worried about, was handing over the coaching to a stranger, essentially. But look, it didn't take too long to realise that Donny knows exactly what he's at from that point of view. So that makes it a bit easier. And sure, I'd say most of the listeners here will know who Ray Boyne is. I'm getting a bit of slagging over Ray's involvement, because he's gone from working with Jim Gavin and Liam Sheedy to working with me. So, and there's a lot of lads sending me pictures of grass with the arrow pointing down over the cliff, you know. But Ray's a great guy. Yeah, exactly. So, but he's won everywhere he's went, and it's great to be able to draw on his experience. And he's so humble with it all and everything. So it's really got us off to a great start, albeit in unusual circumstances, as you said there, Marie, you know.
And you've Sarah Donovan in as well. We've had her on the show a couple of times as well. A great hurling brain, I would say.
Yeah, an interesting character, you know yourself. as she'd say, for Cork and Dublin, and coached against her, I would have thought that that she was fairly mouthy, and having worked with her on women's hurling, I still think the same. But sure, look, no, the players really respect her. And look, a big thing with me always in management teams is to, especially in women's sport, but is to get a good balance of a management team there. I think it's really important in sport or business to have a good balance, of input from different fields and different genders. And look, we've been lucky with that in Dublin with Sarah, with Fiona Armstrong, with Rachel Doolan. But Sarah definitely brings a passion and a different viewpoint to it that's really important as well, you know.
Adrian, what about the players themselves? I was reading you're not a massive fan of communal Zoom sessions. Yeah, you've been leaving it up to themselves. There's an awful lot of trust by you that they get the work done.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Donica. Look, I suppose I'm a big fan of Mikey Kiley, the Limerick S&T coach, the hurling S&T coach. And his approach is to kind of err on the side of doing less. I suppose, obviously, that's countered by the fact that we're new in and we're kind of hoping to hit the ground running early whenever we get back. So what we've done is we upload the sessions on a Sunday to an app called Team Builder, and the players are able to go and do the sessions themselves whenever they can fit them into their schedules. You know, we have a lot of players that are kind of on the front line, doctors, nurses and guards and stuff like that. So just wanted to give them that flexibility at the moment, I suppose, that they're not tied down to having to be on a Zoom call at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday or 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning or whatever. So hopefully that'll mean that they'll be mentally fresh and ready to go whenever we do get to go back, you know.
It's tough though, because we don't know exactly when we're going to be going back. So just trying to keep everybody motivated and morale high. This lockdown has been hard on everyone.
It's been very hard, Marie. And so we spoke before about this at a different event. Like, when we say it's hard, we mean it in a sport context, you know. It's all contextualised by the fact that we're in the middle of a global pandemic, so we have to be realistic as well. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's mentally very difficult for players, for management. You know, it's what we do. This is the time of the year. You're flat out usually in the middle of a national league. You've just finished maybe a third level campaign and you're looking forward to the summer, you know, and the evenings are starting to get a bit brighter. And look, that's all shrouded in uncertainty now, and we just don't know when we're going to get back. And it's definitely having an effect on people mentally, players and management as well. So it is very difficult, but look, I suppose, as I said there, it's contextualised by the fact that, you know, you have frontline workers there that are under serious pressure, and that's the thing that needs to be sorted out first. But hopefully we'll be back sooner rather than later, yeah.
And when you do get back and when Championship does get up and going, what are the goals, Adrian?
Yeah, look, I'd be slow enough to put out any gold on the national airways now. But again, just what Cahill and Salem were saying there when they were on the previous segment there. Look, I mentioned there to start Dublin have 26 titles or whatever, but also, look, there was no victory in senior camogie last year for Dublin. So we just have to start by trying to go from being the 11th place team to be the 10th place team to be the 9th place team. Do you know exactly what the guy said there about the athletics and trying to, you know, fight to be the 16, fight to be the 15. But as I said, you know, that's not being negative. Like, we're looking over the wall there at what Nick Bohan and the ladies footballers have done. And as someone had said to me in the previous event, was I under pressure because of Nick Bohan and what he'd achieved? But absolutely not. You know, you draw inspiration from the people around you. And like, we have no better inspiration than the best female football team in the country training alongside us and wearing the same jersey. So we're certainly hoping to get to the level they're at eventually. But starting with small steps, you know. So I've avoided your question there, Marie.
Absolutely,
yeah. Pure management.
I think we're all looking forward to seeing what you're going to do with them, Adrian. So it'll be great to see everything back up and going and see a bit of action and seeing your stamp, because we've seen over the years the effect that you've had on teams down in UL and in Thomastown as well. So we want to wish you the very best of luck and enjoy it as well, because it's brilliant, I think, to be having a job like that and to have those opportunities.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, we appreciate that. And I suppose, you know yourself, I'm big on promoting camogie itself, the game and that. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on and speak about it. And I know yourself and Ivan and Jackie have been great for that, so it doesn't go unnoticed within the Camogie community as well. So thanks very much for that.
Thanks, Adrian. We'll talk to you very, very soon. That is all we have time for. Tomorrow we're going to have Shane Carty, a Dublin footballer, a former Dublin footballer, and who knows what will happen with him in the future. He has a book out, so we'll be chatting to him about that. And it is halftime in those two early Premier League games, 1-1 for Burnley and Leicester, and Sheffield United are still leading Aston Villa 1-0. Stadio is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.